Welcome to another episode of At the Table with Patrick Lencioni, where everything we talk about is related to changing the world of work so that more organizations can be more effective and less dysfunctional, and employees can be more fulfilled and less miserable. I'm your host, Pat Lencioni, and I'm joined by my co-host, Cody Thompson, still without a new baby, right, Cody?
That's right. Wait, I might have to leave in the middle of this podcast. We'll see. We'll see. If my wife calls me, I'll leave it up to you guys to finish.
We can do a live birth delivery here, video. I mean, an audio, not video. And we've got Tracy with us, Tracy Noble, our producer. How are you doing, Tracy?
Hello, I'm great. Good to be here.
Great to have you on the mic. We have all of our mics back. That's good. Cody, what's the topic today?
It's called Let the Haters Hate.
What does that mean? Let the haters hate. That's right. So what we're talking about here is a very simple and powerful model that we use with our clients all the time. And it's so simple that no one seems to know where it comes from. And yet everyone we explain it to understands it and relates to it immediately and in a visceral way. It's called the law of thirds. And I'm going to do my best here to describe it without the use of any visuals. I think that shouldn't be too hard. And it's all about not paying attention to naysayers because it really hurts our organizations and it hurts our ability to make improvements. So I want everyone to picture the flag of France or Italy or Mexico. I think France is that way too. It's hard to remember. It's three vertical stripes, right, on a flag. And I know some countries are horizontal and it's hard to remember which ones are which, but Italy, I know, has got three vertical stripes. And so I want, and it's these three segments that I'm going to be talking about. So let's say we're looking at the flag and over to the right, I should have looked on this. I think that must be the red color. Is that's the right side over here. And that is the people in an organization who are supportive, who want to do the right thing, and they really want the best for the organization. And when you say, hey, we need to get behind this, they'll tell you the truth about what they think and they'll help you with it, but you know they're your supporters. On the left of the flag are your naysayers. The hater is what we call it now. But they're not hateful necessarily. They're always complaining. Nothing's ever quite good enough. And in the middle third is the undecideds. They're not quite sure which way to go. Now, this doesn't break out into thirds proportionally. In many situations, whether you're running a company and you're thinking about your employees, or you're thinking about your customers, or whether you're running a school and you're thinking about your students or your teachers, or whether you're running, you know, I do this with pastors and they're thinking about the people in their congregation or in the parish. I think usually it breaks down about 10% on the left. The ones that are complaining all the time. It might even be less than that, but somehow it always seems like they're a third or a half because they make themselves seem bigger than they are. And then on the right segment, we've got the supporters, and they're usually more quiet and more just ready to go. And the ones in the middle are probably the biggest segment. They're like, I don't know which way to go here. Okay, the problem here, the essence of the law of thirds is that too many leaders, and I count myself one of them, always spend their time trying to win over the naysayers, the haters.
Right.
And we're so concerned about them. And we just think if I could only win them over, I'm just going to spend as much time and energy as I can pleasing them, and then things will be better. And it's just not true. The ones on the left are usually unpleasable. Complaining and being bitter or being against what's going on is kind of, for whatever reason, it's their nature or that's where they're at in their lives at that point. And when we try to win them over, something really bad happens. Here's what happens. The people in the middle, the undecideds, they're looking around and they're going, well, the leaders seem to be paying a lot of attention to them. So we're going to go act like them too. So what you do is you actually attract your undecideds to the naysayers and they become naysayers too. You know, those supporters on the right, half of them start to say, well, I guess the only way to get the attention of the leaders is to go and be like the naysayers. So half of them learn to complain. The top half, the very best of your supporters, check out and leave or just lose hope. So by virtue of the fact we're trying to please that 5, 10, 15% on the left side of the law of thirds, we end up losing our best supporters and turning more and more people into naysayers. Now, as leaders, when we focus, when we let the haters hate, if you will, and we focus on the supporters, and we actually just, we don't actively persecute or criticize or try to make the people, the naysayers, feel bad. We just don't give them any oxygen. When we focus on the supporters, we say, hey, this is where we're going. I know you're going to love this. the undecideds go, oh, okay, that's where I'm going to go too, because that's where they're going to put their energy and their attention. Half of the naysayers get tired of being naysayers and they convert and they say, okay, I'm going to be helpful here. And here's the best thing. The lower half of the naysayers, they leave on their own. And that is beautiful. That is beautiful for them and for the organization. So the goal here is for leaders to have the courage and the discipline to focus on the positive thing so that more people go there. And that's not to say that the people on the positive side aren't going to give you some feedback and tell you what they disagree with, but they're just not naysayers. They're just not complainers. That is what leaders need to do. And we have to get over the fact that we just want to please the complainers. Okay, that's the big explanation of this. I'm hoping people can see it visually and understand what we're talking about. And I love talking to leaders about this. So what are you guys thinking, Cody, Tracy?
I've seen you present this a ton of times. I love at the very end, the phrase when you say, if we as leaders can have the courage to focus on the supporters in the organization, it's going to dramatically change the, not even the decision and what we're trying to accomplish, but the makeup of our organization, because we're going to give oxygen to the people that are in support of this, you know? And then, and it's courage because it is a human tendency. I think we all can relate to the idea that even if there's a fraction of people who are the squeaky wheel, for example, you know, we tend to put our energy and effort into trying to convince them. And we do that in our businesses, in our personal lives, for our customers, across the board. And it really is about courage to say, I'm going to lean into the positive. And it does have a dramatic impact on people's organization.
Hey, Tracy, you're naturally a supporter. I mean, you have a great attitude. You always have. I dedicated the book, The Ideal Team Player, to you. And everyone in my company and our organization says, you are the ideal team player. What is it like to be that supporter and know that the leaders are trying to wine and dine the whiners?
Oh gosh, it's so painful for me. You know, you're too kind, Pat, because I tend to be slow. I'm not necessarily a first mover when it comes to things.
So you might consider yourself into be the undecideds at first when something.
Yeah, I can fall into that undecided category oftentimes. And when I see my leader focusing on those naysayers, that really has an impact on me. It's painful for me, and I could easily slide into that category. So it's so important that for me to see my leader focusing on those supporters, because I could easily slide into that category. That influences me greatly, I would say.
I don't think it works this way because parenting is a little different. But even if you have, I mean, I have four kids, and let's just say you have one that's misbehaving and the parents are like, I have to spend all my time with that one. The others are like, really? And I think deep down, when kids are young, especially, they can go, okay, I guess I need to misbehave too to get mom and dad's attention.
Right.
I know there's more to child psychology than that, but even that can, but here's the group of people that I love to talk to about this the most, and that's priests, pastors, and ministers, you know, because they look at their congregation and there's always this small group of people that complain about every sermon, every homily, every little program. They're like, there wasn't enough non-alcoholic beverages, or there wasn't enough, the music is too modern. Your homily was too this, or whatever else. And the priests or the ministers are just like, oh my gosh, I get so tired of hearing that. And those four or five people that always complain, they always say, hey, everybody agrees with me that your homilies are too this or that. Right. And the problem with that is that we start to think that if we don't please them, something terrible is going to happen. And we also think that if they leave, then we're failing. See, this is the thing. Too many leaders think if any of my customers leave, or any of my parishioners leave, or any of my employees leave, I'm failing. And that's just a really bad way to look at success.
Yeah, you know, there's two things that kind of come to mind as you're talking about this, because I would imagine there's some listeners who are like, well, you guys are always talking about good conflict. You know, like, don't you want people to engage in good conflict around ideas? And that's not what we're saying are in this category. This isn't about like, let's have good conflict around the idea. These are the people that consistently are just naysayers. They're they're anchors rather than sails, you know, and it's every time.
It's a really good point, Cody. I think about, like we talked about, plant your tree and burn your ships. These are the kind of people that you plant the tree and they go, oh, that tree's never going to grow. I think it's kind of ugly. And they're just, no matter what you're doing, they're telling you why it won't work. It's not to say, hey, let me help you. I think you might've made a mistake in planning. Let me help you do a better job. A supporter does that. It's the people who just say, oh, I don't like this. I don't like that. And we all know people like this in our organizations, right, in our personal lives, that just never seem to be pleasable. Don't try to please them. In fact, allow them to be displeased, because then they're either going to change on their own, which is beautiful, or they're going to opt out, which is the second most beautiful thing.
Right. The second thing I was going to mention is, I love when you said it's actually a beautiful thing for them to leave, because one of the stories, I think we might have told it on this podcast before, but one of my favorite ones is Herb Keller, the founder of Southwest Airlines. We tell the story where there was a flight attendant, and people who've been on Southwest know that they, flight attendants can be funny, and they go through the safety briefing, and they, you know, I think in this particular instance, one of the flight attendants said something like, in case of a water landing, we're going to be coming around or coming down the aisles with drinks with umbrellas in them, like, you know, beach drinks or something. And one of the customers wrote in after that flight and was just talking about, like, man, safety is really serious, and I don't think you should make a parody of this. And Herb Keller, and I think so many leaders in that instance, and this is the naysayer, they would try to win that person over. And instead of doing that, he wrote back a very simple 3-word email or note that said, we'll miss you. You know, and we don't have the courage to do that very often.
Right. And, you know, I would say, so as far as like their humor on the airline, I would probably have considered myself the first few times I flew Southwest to be undecided. I don't know if this is silly and corny or not. I love it now.
Yeah.
Because you know what? You know why I love it? Because they're unapologetic about it. Yep. And that they're allowing that employee to be silly, and good for them. That's a hard job. And even if it's a corny joke or they sing a silly song, I'm like, I'm a fan.
Yep.
But if they were apologizing constantly, or they said, okay, we're going to have to teach these people how to say exactly the right things, and because we don't want to offend anybody, I'd have been like, that's wimpy. And I'd have probably become I'd have said, no, I don't think you should have done that one. And I don't think you, now I'm just like, let them loose. It's yeah. Great. You know, when I'm talking to CEOs about this, the biggest thing that convinces them is what I said earlier. I say, you know, if you pay attention to the naysayers, your best people will leave.
Yeah.
And they go, oh my gosh, you're totally right. You're totally right. I'm not going to do that anymore. And then when I say, and if you pay attention to your supporters, the very worst people will leave. I'm like, you're totally right. I hope they do. I hope we don't have to take HR through it and drag them through the mud and make them feel bad. I hope they just go, hey, this isn't for me.
I also think that one of the things that comes up in the midst of this conversation is the idea of consensus. They think that we have a tendency to think that in organizations and otherwise in our families that, oh, we should only make decisions that everyone buys into. And I think that in the midst of a conversation like this, what you can do is go embrace the idea that not everyone's going to buy into that. And that's actually a good thing. If everyone is on board, like you said, Pat, before we talked about this, it's like, if everyone in the organization buys into a decision really wholeheartedly, it means like we're probably way behind making that decision in the first place.
I agree. You know, I think that the hardest thing here is people think that they want to please everyone, and that's very human. But you really should pick the people you want to please the most. And we don't do that enough. You know, I'm working with an organization right now trying to help them figure out their values. And I've seen many companies have all their employees vote on what their values should be.
Right.
And it's like, you realize the people who have the wrong values are voting too, right? It's like, how about if you pick like the top 10 people in your organization that you just think the world of and get them in a room and help you figure this out? Because you really don't want other people involved in this. Mm-hmm. You know, democracy is really, well, Churchill said it's the worst form of government except for all the others. And I agree with that. I also think it's a terrible way to run an organization.
Right.
Because like what you said, if everybody is agreeing with something, then probably you should have done it a long time ago. And it's probably not that meaningful. If you're making a really good decision and nobody is questioning it and complaining, then you're probably not doing anything important. And so now, ultimately, though, I guess if you get rid of all your complainers, then the people that are disagreeing with you, they're doing it because they're trying to make it better. And that's good. But any sizable organization is always going to have people that slide into the complainer category. And the best way to help them get out of it is not to give them too much oxygen.
Even in the context of losing your best people, we're looking at Tracy right now. And we've said over and over again, like, man, if we could just clone her, we would just hire as many of her as we could clone. And imagine making a decision. And Tracy, you being, or us giving oxygen to people, you know, to the naysayers in that sense, and you being so frustrated that you would leave, or, I mean, that alone should prevent people from, you know, focusing too much on that left third of the flag.
It happens all the time.
But why? Why does it? I don't get it. Like it, this makes so much sense. Why do people, I focus on naysayers all the time. What is it?
I think because, you know, like when you're in the wild, you know, they say like if a bear comes on you or a mountain lion, I remember there was a mountain lion in our area recently. I don't live in that remote of a place. And so it was pretty big. They said, if you see that mountain lion in this area, take off your jacket and hold it above your head and spread it out and make yourself look bigger. Mm. And I think that when we can make ourselves seem bigger than we are, we scare people. Mm-hmm. I think that naysayers have a way of telling you like, oh, this is what I think. And everyone else is saying it too.
Right.
And so we mm-hmm. start to go, oh my gosh, what if this is most of the employees who are complaining about this? What if most of the people in my neighborhood think this or in society? And so we start to think we have to like please them and do something or else we're going to be a threat or going to be threatened. I mean, mm-hmm. the truth is it's rarely, most of the time, the naysayers are a very small percentage, but they are really good at making themselves seem bigger. And on the other side, Trace, the supporters don't stop by and say, hey, you remember, I'm still supporting you. I love it. I love what you're doing.
That's true.
Those naysayers get you down. And if you're in an organization and you see a leader starting to struggle, go by and tell them, hey, I really do believe 70% of the people think this is a great idea. 20% are about ready to get on it, as long as you stay on top of it. Do not worry about those seven guys over there that are complaining all the time. We tend not to do that. The supporters tend to be relatively quiet. And it allows leaders to underestimate how much support they have.
Yeah. You know, what's so interesting, especially is true in a product company. You know, like I worked at a startup where we did menswear, you know, and it was so hard to not actually go down the path of the naysayers who one or two people would have a problem with the fit of our jeans or the buttons on our shirt or something. And you have this tendency to think that there are a lot more people out there that thought that, or they tend to try to gain momentum in that, like, oh, well, I'm not going to buy anymore if this doesn't change. And then I've been on the other side as a customer of a product that where they made a change to the fit or something. And immediately all the supporters came out of the woodwork, like, what the heck were you doing? And they said, oh, well, there were these two or three people that reached out that thought it wasn't the right thing. And they go ahead and piss off all the people that were in large support that just weren't as squeaky of a wheel as the naysayers.
When I give a speech to a live audience, if three people in the audience are asleep, I could have an audience of 3,000 and I could see three people look bored or asleep. I literally will walk over and speak right in front of them. Not consciously, intentionally, but I'm like, oh my gosh, I must be bored. And the rest of the people are going to be standing up clapping going, we love this. Heck, for all I know, those people have narcolepsy, we're up all night, or just don't care about this thing. And yet I get so focused on pleasing them. It just doesn't make sense, but I think it's human nature. And that's why leadership is actually being intentional, even when your human nature is telling you to do something that's harmful or hurtful.
Mm-hmm. And I love the connection you drew to the previous two podcasts. Not that this is a series, but if people have planted trees, right? If they've planted these new trees and if they've burned old boats, there's going to be people that come out of the woodwork that say, no, we can't do that. We can't burn that ship. That's the thing that we need to hold on to. Like, this is our legacy product, or this is the thing that we need to try to revive. And I think that this is going to have direct applications to how well that tree's going to grow. You know, who are you giving oxygen to around this? And who are you inviting in to participate in the conversation? And I think not enough leaders actually have enough, like, sit and think enough about who are my top people and am I frustrating them if I make this decision the wrong way?
Exactly. We need to have that avatar. Like, that's the person I'm trying to please. And we should probably have an avatar of the complainer. It's like, oh, if I hear from them, I should do what the opposite of what they want me to do. It's like, you know, imagine somebody writing in. And by the way, this has happened throughout my career and in life. Imagine somebody wrote in and said, Tracy, I don't think you should use the word suck on your podcast. And Tracy came to us and said, you guys, okay, no more of that. What we should do is just go, how many people said that? Mm-hmm. And who are they? And granted, if 10 people call us and say, hey, we love your podcast, we totally want you to be this, but the word suck, it just turns us off and we're not going to use it, then we'd consider that. But if it's just somebody that's just complaining and we start to water things down, it's going to show and people are going to be like, they've lost their personality. They lost what makes them who they are. And companies do this all the time. Three letters from customers. about something makes them change what they offer. And that hurts 300 other customers who loved you just for that.
Totally.
Hey, Pat, I think I just said what you just said, Cody. So I just repeated it.
I have to say, though, you mentioned the suck title. I just have to say that we're getting a lot of feedback. I'm actually getting quite heckled around it. Like, Gracie, suck is a great title. Stop telling them it's not.
Yeah, we've used you as kind of the bad cop, but really, Tracy,
that's not. Okay. I love it. I love it.
Yeah, that's funny.
It resonates with people. So you can use that word suck as much as you want.
Right. Hey, you know, I just realized this. Maybe this is something we're going to start doing. I just thought of it right now. And that is, so you might have an example of something in your life or in your company where you paid attention to the naysayers and it went wrong, or you ignored them with kindness and dignity. You ignored them and it got people on board. And you might have an example where some of your best people left and you're like, oh man, that's true. Or some of the worst people left and found a better place for them. And you did the right thing. So we love those kind of stories. And you know, what we're going to start doing is sharing more of those stories on this. Also, a couple of things I want to remind people about is, what day is it in August? Is it the 4th?
August 4th, yes.
August 4th at 10 a.m. Pacific time, we're going to have a live online, you know, a webinar. So you can see Tracy and Cody and I and a couple other folks here in Lafayette. And we're going to be doing some stuff like that. And then I think in August, we're going to try to put this podcast up on video as well. So we're going to probably start doing that too. Remember, if you send something in, we're going to send you a handy dandy notebook. And if you have kids that grew up 10 years ago or longer, you know, that's from the show Blue's Clues. Anyway, I think this is all the law of thirds. Think about it. Talk to your family, your spouse, your managers, your peers about it, because I think it's a really good tool for making our lives better and moving things in the right direction. That's it for today. Hopefully the next time we talk, Cody will have a new baby boy. Right. We know it's a boy. A girl would be fine too, but we actually know it's a boy. And so Cody, God bless you. And thank you for joining us today, Tracy. Everybody, we'll look forward to talking to you next time on At the Table with Patrick Lencioni. God bless.